What are you currently working on to keep existing viewers watching your content and to attract new viewers to discover your content? Today's guest argues that it's not about the consumer finding your content, but more about the content finding the consumer. I'm Kareem Taylor, contributing editor at Promax BDA, and you're listening to the Daily Brief Podcast. If you're not already doing so, be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts and give us all the stars. Today, we're going back to New York City to the Promax BDA Conference 2018 for a session titled Make Your Content Find the Consumer, presented by Chris Ambrosic, head of personalized content discovery at TiVo. Chris asks us all, how do we go beyond the set-top box and crack the code of viewer engagement on all screens? With higher viewership and more connected devices, apps, services, and UIs than ever, your content must be relevant to your audience. Chris argues and shows proven methods for why. Personalization is key. This is a good one. And there's a nice Q&A following this episode that is sure to inspire your next creative solution. Let's listen in.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for the time today. Thank the organizers. I want to start by introducing myself. I work with the personalized content discovery team inside of TiVo. So first question I have to ask, hands up for those of you who remember TiVo. Yes, very nice, very nice. I have just my own personal anecdotal story on that. You know, you go to various parties in the neighborhood, et cetera. Oh, what do you do, Chris? Oh, I work for TiVo. Oh, that company? And I keep looking like, where are they pointing? Everybody, you know, remembers their first TiVo experience. I know I do, 20 years ago. It was fantastic, and it was amazing technology that really changed the way I enjoyed and interacted and engaged with TV. And 20 years later, we're still doing that in very different ways. And that's what I'm here to talk about today, is how TiVo is actually driving personalization into this space to really create those magical moments again. There's a number of us that are participating in this that are really trying to essentially grow that engagement across all the different ways and all the different distribution channels that we're facing these days. So what's the challenge that we have today? Well, it's the golden age of video, no doubt. I, like everybody else, have more TV to watch than I possibly have time for. And my kids the same way, and my wife the same way. In fact, anecdotally, it's quite interesting that we have a consumer survey that we reach out to consumers about to really try and understand their behaviors and their patterns. We have started asking them what drives them to what we call dump shows, because there's so many things to watch. You guys are creating so many wonderful things, so many wonderful creative, so many wonderful different pieces of content that it's hard for people like me to stay up to date. So it's really all about engagement and finding your audience. And at the end of the day, if there's one thing you take away from this presentation, is that you connect finding your audience with personalization. And that is essentially my focus and what the team that I work with do every day, day in, day out. We're all about trying to drive engagement through personalization, and the way we do that through various algorithms, machine learning, etc. So it's all about pursuit of scale. Now, of course, that's harder and harder to do these days. There's more channels. Previously, it used to be very simple, right? You put your content out there, goes to broadcasting cable, goes out to televisions. It was pretty straightforward. Now that is completely upended. And we're all for the better for it, I would like to argue. I think we're all better for the fact that, you know, we obviously still have broadcasting cable, but there's different OTT services. There's different consumption patterns through TV everywhere. There's obviously things like YouTube and so on. Just a personal comment. I mean, I subscribe to the NHL Network directly. I've subscribed to Formula One directly. I pay for my content because I like that content, and I will go and find it, right? Now the question is, how do those people find me? How do they get me hooked in? How do they get people like me hooked in? And that's really, again, all about personalization. And you don't have much time to do this. Just another comment from the data side of our business is that literally people will engage in an order of about 30 seconds, 90 seconds maximum. If we can't find and put the right content in front of people in that 30 to 90 seconds, forget it. They're off, you know, doing something else. They're off washing the dishes because they've been told to wash the dishes. You know, there's so many things that are driving our attention and attracting us that it's impossible without being able to make the right connection to the right people at the right time on the right device in all of these environments. And in addition to that, of course, people are now making direct connections to their consumers. Instead of going through some sort of delivery mechanism, you guys are now reaching those consumers directly. And you're really challenged by trying to understand the way those individuals engage, the way those individuals behave, and what drives their behavior, what turns them on, and what turns them off. And so that's another challenge. So we have to adapt. We have to use technology to try and change this equation. And it has a very big impact on the bottom line. So we look at, for instance, some of our business is CPM driven, and when we put the right content in front of the right person, and we target the right individuals with that right piece of content, we drive CPMs, or we help our customers and their customers and the content creators drive CPMs that are 10x, 20x, what you see in a traditional, more quote-unquote linear television environment, okay? So there's a massive incentive in place for us to try and find these individuals and try and engage them in a way that they've never been engaged before and try and recreate that experience that I had when I first did my TiVo unboxing 20 years ago, which I know dates me, but I have to throw that in there. Okay, so it's time to personalize. So next set of questions. Hands up for those of you that have a good feel for what I mean about personalization. I want to get a judge in the audience here. Oh, maybe about 10% of you. Okay, how many people are doing personalization today? Reaching out to their consumers today? Maybe about half of those or even less. All right, so let's just a step back in what I mean by personalization. What I'm talking about is, I would imagine everybody has Netflix or something like Netflix. You have carousels, right? You have content that is put in front of you for various reasons. Because you liked this show, there is this other show that you might enjoy. Because we seem to think that you like these types of documentaries, here's a bunch of more documentaries. It's using the consumer's behavior to drive more similar content directly to them. And so that's personalization. And that takes the form of a lot of different things. Those of us who sat in the previous the session talked about voice. People use their voice to discover. That's something we're helping people with. People use, obviously, those carousels that they use to discover, and that is very powerful as well. They use text-based search, etc. 80% of consumers at the end of the day want and respond to this type of interaction. So if you're not considering, for those of you that are, congratulations, it's really good. It's extremely powerful, and I'll explain up there. Some of the results that we're seeing. For those of you that aren't, please consider this. This is one of the most powerful ways in which you can interact with consumers to try and find the right types of fans, to try and find the right types of individuals, the right look-alike groups, etc. So again, from one of the surveys we do, 80% of consumers are more likely to engage with a personalized experience. Here are three different examples of types of results that we've seen in the marketplace. First one on the left-hand side, personally recommended carousels and lists outperform manually curated lists and titles by a rate of 4-1. How did we do this? This was actually a number of years ago. We had a web interface that one of our customers put up, and it'd say it was 10 carousels deep by about 5 titles per, and so you've got about 50 titles over there. They gave us about 20% of the carousels. Okay, they said, we don't know if you guys are going to really drive the type of engagement we want to drive, so we'll test drive you. And we ran this over a course of a month, did some A-B testing associated with this, and those 20% of personally recommended carousels drove 80% of the click activity. It was clear that people responded to stuff that was equivalent to their behavior, that matched their behavior, that really responded to the way they enjoyed content and what they enjoyed. The middle one, another interesting example where we took new fall season content and through targeting and A-B testing, we were able to drive massive click-through rate increases. And I won't say which show, I don't want to get anybody in trouble here, but for one of these shows, this is the kind of result we saw. That show was off the air after a few sessions because it didn't really find the right audience. I would argue that the audience was there, right? The audience was there. Netflix has been doing that for a few years now. We all laugh and they say, oh yeah, we're making investment and this comedian is gonna produce a number of of shows for us, and we laugh and say, oh my gosh, it's a has-been comedian. There's no way they're going to actually drive a lot of views. Well, they have the let the data tell them that this is the right type of investment. And we saw the same sort of thing with our A-B testing. If you find the right audience, they'll respond, right? If you can get your content in front of the right people, they'll respond. Now, they not only just respond and click on it. That's pretty easy to do. It's actually, in data science, pretty easy to drive people to click on things. The real challenge is, can you drive them to stick with it? And can you actually get people consuming for more period of time, longer period of times? That's more ad rolls, that drives more revenue, the CPMs I mentioned earlier, et cetera. So when we saw this sort of cross-promotion on a network that we were working with, and it was personalization driven, we saw a 35% increase in viewer engagement. And there's a lot of things that go into viewer engagement, but for the purposes of our conversation here, that's really just how long people spent watching the content. They stuck with the content longer because it was appropriate for them. And that drove all the revenue associated that went along with that. We also not only ask customers about, you know, their own experiences and what they are what they're seeing in the marketplace and what they respond to. That's the first bullet point on the top. But we also ask them about Netflix. Say, hey guys, what do you rank in terms of importance? Is it? Do you like Netflix because it's cheap? Hands up for those who like Netflix because it's cheap. Nobody. Excellent. Okay. Good. Plays into my narrative. Because you have profiles. This is always an interesting one. Profiles. My profile is full of My Little Pony. You can tell what kind of kids I have. Profiles, unfortunately, still a work in progress. Kids constantly infiltrating our profiles. The number one thing that constantly comes back about what people like about their Netflix service is personalization. Is it introduces them to content they did not know existed, and it's content that's appropriate to what they enjoy viewing and what they really enjoy consuming. Okay. So at the end of the day, just to underline, these are the types of improvements that we see in the space, not just us, our competitors, and other types of solutions that are out there driving personalization. It is a key core component to trying to drive engagement. So how do we go about and do this? Well, we have to, on the left-hand side, make sure that we are showing people the full catalog. Personalization does one thing very well. It brings up what we call in data science the long tail of content, right? It's not just the stuff that happens to be popular today in the top 10 shows, and people will find that stuff regardless. People will find Game of Thrones no matter where you put it. It's all about finding the stuff sort of farther in the tail that they didn't, again, know existed. So it's across a full catalog. That's critical. And pulling out stuff from the primary, from cross networks, from VOD libraries, from local and digital. It does not matter where the source is. I think it's kind of funny. We still turn on our TV. And for those of us, maybe they have set-top boxes still, you go to this thing called a VOD library. A VOD library, that's just a destination. And frankly, no consumer outside of maybe us and a few others in the industry know what a VOD thing is anyways. It's all about content they want to see. So it's not about where it's coming from. It's about surfacing the content and making that content centric to the interactive experience. And then you've got to make it sticky. So it's got to be intuitive, easy to use. Less clicks per content. Not only are we seeing about 30 seconds for people to find content, it's one or two clicks and that's it. If you can't get people to their content in 30 seconds, in one or two clicks, you've lost them to something else. There's just too many things. My phone's beeping at me, right? There's too many things that grab our attention. It has to be responsive. One of the great things that we see when people start to use voice interaction is they see their words read back to them on the screen. It updates in real time. It sounds like just a silly thing. And from a point of view of a product manager and a person that has started in data science, that seems really strange. But they love the responsiveness of it. Go to this channel. Go to that channel. Find Game of Thrones. Give me something comedic. And that responsiveness really drives engagement. It has to be predictive. What do we mean by that? Well, it's quite interesting. We did a whole research a couple years ago about what types of content people respond to on the weekends. They're very suggestive in nature. It's a very lean-back type of experience. 60% of the click activity we see on a weekend is for content people have yet to see before. They're very suggestive on the weekends. Makes sense. On the weekdays, it's much more predictive in nature. What does that mean? That means that people on Tuesday at 8 p.m. go back to the same stuff they were watching every Tuesday at 8 p.m. or Thursday at 8 p.m. Or maybe they were binge watching yesterday and they're picking up. I always throw myself under the bus, you know, put the kids to bed, 8 o'clock, I watch the news. You can pretty much tell what I'm doing at 8:05. I'm watching the news. I'm very predictive. And a lot of people are in that way. On the weekend, very different. So understanding not only how to personalize, but when personalization is important in one sense, time of day, day of week, in another sense, one device versus another, also very critical. Another data point for you on performance, when you find that right content and you put it in the right real estate, this becomes very critical as well, then you're going to drive a significant lift. So we see some really significant numbers, 80 times more likely to click on the content, 21 times more likely to actually view the content. Very significant lift numbers associated with that. And that's really driven across a couple of main axes. Not only, you know, are you putting it in the back page or you put it in the front page, real estate matters. CPMs then matter along with that. And then also the type of device, right? Whether it's a snacking device or it's a real long-form consumption type device. That matters as well. And so think about not only, you know, get this in front of the right people, target the right audiences and you'll succeed, but also make sure that you're using your real estate and monetizing your real estate in the right fashion. And there's a very significant way to optimize that. All right, let's talk metadata. So this is always one of my friends. All right, hands up for those who are really pumped and excited to talk about metadata this afternoon. Oh my goodness, 1, 2, 3, 4, there's like 12, that was fantastic, thank you. I'm done, I don't have to convince you guys. Metadata, there's a guy actually at TiVo who is one of the most, puts me to shame. His presentation on metadata is fantastic. He can sell anything to anybody if he can sell metadata. So that's a nice segue into talking about the importance of metadata. And it is a little bit like an iceberg for us. There is what you see and there is what you don't see. And I am going to argue that both are extremely important when it comes to personalization, when it comes to engagement. So all the things that we typically think about in terms of metadata, the cast, the writer, producer, director, et cetera, all that stuff that's sort of above the waterline there, and the image metadata, that all comes to mind very quickly. I'm going to show you that actually it's not only that, but also the stuff below the waterline, all the way down to, at the very bottom there, deep descriptors and keywords, theme, tone, mood, and the story. If you want to find your audience, if you want to go across all these devices, across all these competing channels of consumption, and all the content that's available to you, you have to be producing this type of metadata, because there are people like me who are absolutely taking advantage of this type of metadata. The more metadata you put in front of us, the better I can do a job finding you the right audience, okay, and finding you the right people for your content. So just a little bit of data on how significant an investment TiVo has made down this path. We have recognized that metadata is so critical to ensuring that we put the right content in front of the right people to drive the right engagement, to be able to, you know, reduce churn and keep loyal audiences, that over the last 4 years or so, the company has made a significant investment in image metadata to this tune that you see right here, 718% expansion since 2014. That's not only official images, but it's also images that we then do genre and title overlay and information on top of to try and drive the right type of image in front of the right person at the right time. So this is a pretty significant thing. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is use all those images and all of those metadata that you saw in the previous two slides to do some really cool algorithmic stuff. Now, hands up, please. Any data scientists in the audience? Come on, there's gotta be one more than me. Okay, no, all right. I tried. So this is a little bit of data science. This is our knowledge graph, or a visualization of our knowledge graph. And what this knowledge graph is, it's essentially a way mathematically to link using metadata and using consumers' behaviors from one piece of content to another. So the example we have here is we saw Jordan Peele, okay, satirical horror film, Get Out, and connecting that ultimately through various cast members, through various genres, two other pieces of content to Glengarry Glen Ross. And this is sort of this concept, this is an example of this concept of spontaneous discovery. And consumers love this. They love when there's something presented to them that it's almost like you understood inside their head what they were looking for, and they didn't say it, and they didn't type it out, I'm looking for Glengarry Glen Ross, or I'm looking for this type of movie or that type of movie. And you have really this incredible experience as a consumer to find this content. That metadata that I showed in that example of the iceberg, I'm now ranking in terms of importance to doing what I just saw on this previous slide. So remember I talked about things like theme and directors and genres and settings and moods, right, along with description, etc. These are all the metadata fields that algorithmically we take advantage of. If I go back, can I do that? Yeah. All the metadata fields that I take advantage of as we try and drive these spontaneous discovery sessions. So if you guys are out there thinking about what types of metadata you need to create and whether or not that's going to matter, I am sitting here advocating to you guys, yes, it matters. It matters absolutely. Because if you want to drive these types of really engaged individuals that experience this content discovery in a way that they then go tell their friends, oh my gosh, I was, you know, looking at this piece of content and I had, it knew that I would like this other piece of content and this was a movie I've never seen before and it was one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. It all really stems from a couple things. It stems from consumer behavior, what they watch, and it stems from the metadata that supports that content of what they watch. So we see the content creators as an absolute key part of a personalized content discovery environment. I can't do my job without you guys doing your job, so thank you. An example of that, which I think is really good, I won't go through all the metadata of all these different assets, but this is a little bit older one, and it was one that we really, when we were first doing this several years ago, it was a great example, and I keep coming back to it, A Beautiful Mind. Now, if you go and look at A Beautiful Mind, nowhere in the metadata is the actual word biopic listed. It's not there. There's other types of genres, right? There's obviously description, there's actors, and so on. But no one in there is biopic. And when somebody looks at A Beautiful Mind, I mean, we make a recommendation for things like Ray and Aviator, Malcolm X, and so on. And at the end of the day, those are also all biopics. So it's not that we're just keying off of one genre and saying, yeah, let's just give this person this same genre. If that was the case, then everything would be called action, or everything would be called comedy. And that's really not a good discovery or engagement experience. It's about all those metadata pieces coming together and modeling them using algorithms, using machine learning, using data science that we do in our back end to take advantage of all the metadata you guys are creating to be able to put together a result like this. Okay? And this is what people respond to. So the proof is really in the metrics. At the end of the day, I gave these examples, I'll come back to them. What we're really trying to drive is find audiences, help you guys find audiences that will remain loyal, will come back, become fans of the content, and really introduce that concept of shoulder groups or what we'll call lookalike people and try and identify individuals that could be then part of that same consumption group or consumption behavior. And it all ties together. All of the metadata that's created, all the user behavior that's created, all the different ways in which we're surfacing the content at the right time, on the right device, for the right target group, all of that drives an incredible experience that people come back to time and time again. So I thank you very much for the time. We have a few minutes for questions, and I'd like to thank the organizers as well.
You mentioned that weekday viewing habits are predictive, not so on the weekends.
Yeah.
Do you include Sunday night in that? Do you find that Sunday night is more predictive?
Oh, good question. Yes. In fact, sorry, I should have mentioned it when I defined it. For me, when we were looking at those data, we were calling a weekend the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the weekday was Monday through Thursday. So now, again, it was a 60-40 split, right? So it indexed a little bit heavier in more predictions of weekdays and more suggestive on the weekends. It wasn't, winner take all, but it definitely was more towards that for Sunday as well. Thanks for the question. Sorry.
How reactive are you guys to the data that you're seeing? Are you making decisions on a daily basis? Are you shuffling things that frequently or what?
Yeah. So for the binge watching example I was giving, it's almost hourly. The vast majority of behavior doesn't move that quickly. And so other algorithms of ours are updated nightly through to weekly, through to monthly, to even, as I mentioned earlier, year, sort of over a period of time. That's one half of the answer. The other half of the answer is the fact that we are taking into account people's click activity in real time. So that feedback mechanism, that feedback loop is always in place. The example we always give is that if I type B into a search box and I'm looking for Brad Pitt, then for me, as I click on that content, that should come up, Brad Pitt should show up for me, and I should know that really almost instantaneously versus you, maybe you're looking for Big Bang Theory. And so you have a different set of results. And so we have both our algorithms as well as our feedback mechanisms in place to try and move as responsive as possible. Thank you. And there was another one somewhere here. Yeah.
So a lot of the data points that you're talking about are based on the content and how people are consuming the content, not as much on their persona and their profile. How do you see that moving forward with tying into other data points, like through Facebook, social media, and then being able to really get more targeted and nail the content that person would want?
Yeah, fantastic question. Thank you. And you caught something I didn't talk about. Yes. We actually look at, there's a different aspect of TiVo that spends more time building that type of more holistic perspective of the user. And they use that for a variety of other purposes. We've not really, at least in the personalization aspect of what we've been doing, we have not been basing it too much on those different data feeds, something that we can work on certainly in the future, but there's different aspects. We can talk afterwards if you'd like to chat with some of those folks that are doing that. Maybe time for one more.
Hi, with all these awesome choices and so many great TV and movies out there now, are you guys worried at all about decision fatigue in users, even if you're giving them great recommendations? Is there too much, or how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Analysis paralysis, the paradox of choice, absolutely. I think we are, this is now maybe my perspective, less than something I would say is necessarily data-driven. I think we're gonna be driving towards less, pages full of carousels. I think as we get better in the way we surface content, it's gonna come down to a carousel or two, or maybe even just a voice box saying, what do you want? I think as we provide, dozens and dozens of carousels, to your point, people become overwhelmed. I think we got to do a better job. We've sort of exploded this, and I think we're going to come back to a simpler interface in the long term. Great point. All right, I'd like to thank everybody for their time.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. Kareem Taylor produced this episode. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate Lekire-Marion contributes to Daily Brief. Follow Promax BDA on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.